Welcome to the SEU CTI podcast. Have you ever had a great idea that you wanted to implement in your classroom but didn't have the funds? This is where the Spark office at SEU can help. In this episode, we're going to talk to Sylvia Bradshaw and Carrie Childs about how to make the most out of your grant funds by utilizing facilities and administrative costs, or better known as FNA. Greetings, everyone. My name's Matt McKenzie, and I know I'm not the host you're used to hearing on this podcast, but during the summer months, I'm going to be taking over for Tony Pellegrini and talking to different individuals around campus and in different organizations about how they can impact teaching and learning in higher education. Today, I have with me Sylvia Bradshaw and Carrie Childs with the Sponsored Programs, Agreements, Research, and Contracts Group Department, SPARC. I know you better as SPARC, which is why I'm slowing down there to make sure I say that right.
Hey, I'm just impressed you actually got through all of those words. That is a mouthful. Great job, Matt.
I've got them written down. So I know I've worked a little bit with you. Our department, CTI, currently has a grant that's going in that we're definitely communicating with you about how to adjust things and where can we spend money. But tell us a little bit about what does SPARC do and how is that beneficial to SEU?
Awesome. I love to talk about this. Thanks for having us here. We're excited to be here today. So sponsored programs, that's the term that many people don't understand. That's really what the rest of our title is: sponsored programs, agreements, research, and contracts. The agreements, research, and contracts are sponsored programs. Somebody just very smartly put that all together to make a catchy acronym for us sometime down the road, and we inherited it. And we like the term SPARC. We like to be sparky.
So yep. It's an easy one to remember.
It is. So. It is. But so many people have no idea what that really means. But the actual, what it means is grants. Not your student grants, that they get Pell grants and so whatnot. That's why we use the term sponsored programs, is to try to differentiate from that. These are the grants that come from federal sponsors, state sponsors, foundation sponsors, some local government sponsors that give us money to do a project or a program on behalf of something they want to benefit. But it also mutually benefits SUU.
So that would be like, I know my wife Jen has a grant where it pays for practicing teachers to get their special ed degree. It's those kinds of grants that would go through your office. And
exactly. So the state gives her money to set up a program to attract teachers to come to SUU to learn more about getting that endorsement for special ed. So they give us funding so that Jen can then go create that program, and we pay for her time to do it. We pay for the travel for the participants that are in the program to make all of that happen. So it benefits SUU because we are able to be the leader, so to speak, of that special ed environment and to help train our educators in the state. And it also helps, obviously, the whole state because we are now getting better trained educators. So yes, we love those types of grants. Jen's a rock star.
She'll be happy to hear that. because I also know that my department is involved with SPARC, as we are working with the virtual and augmented reality grant.
That's right.
You know, now that we have those funds and we have the MOU, we're starting to do things. And I know we're trying to collaborate to figure out what can we do, what can we not. And I know that as we've talked about that, and we've talked about how that grant works, and it's a learning process. Like everything else in life, it's a learning process. And there was a key aspect of our grant that should have been included, but we didn't. Do you want to talk about that for a second?
I would love to. I believe what you're referring to is the FNA rate. FNA stands for Facilities and Administrative Rate. This is often a misunderstood concept with grants. The rate at SUU for FNA is 45% of salaries, wages, and benefits. So that means if you have a $20,000 grant, $10,000 of it is paying for salaries, wages, and benefits, we would charge $4,500 on top of those salaries, wages, and benefits. This often doesn't come across if you're a PI and you've just put in all the work to write a grant and you're excited. You know exactly how you're going to spend that $20,000. And then here comes Spark and says, oh, you got to give me $4,500 of that. It doesn't always feel so good.
No.
And so we work really hard to help people understand upfront going into it what F&A is, that those are actual real costs that we do have to cover from the institution. So I'm going to back up a little bit. This is a loaded question.
Okay.
If I get talking too deep, you just stop me and you say, hey, Sylvia, back up.
Don't worry. I have no problem stopping anyone saying, I have no clue what you're talking about.
Great. Okay. So what is F&A? F&A is kind of like overhead. If you were to go to Walmart and buy a tub of toothpaste, you're not just paying for the toothpaste that's inside that tube. You're also paying for the associates that stocked it on the shelves. You're paying for the lights that are on so that you can see what's on the shelf. You're paying for the cashier that's going to check you out. You're paying for the building that you came to pick up that piece of toothpaste. You're also paying for the truckers that brought the toothpaste to Walmart. You're paying for all of those costs that it's really, really hard to say to allocate to that one tube of toothpaste. It would really be too much for any accountant anywhere to try to assign that.
Right.
And so with grants, it's the same way. When you bring a grant to an institution, you have it often affects payroll and HR because we're hiring people to do the work, whether it's students or whether it's faculty members or whether it's people from outside. We're hiring people. So that is creating an impact for all of our administrative type services. We're also creating space to do that work. We're creating a heavier burden on custodial. We're also creating IT support. The sponsor programs office is support. All of the administrative offices like the deans, the chairs, the admins in each different area, those are all absolute real costs that we're paying for. And anytime we bring on a new project, we are adding burden to those positions. So we have to pay for it somehow. They're definitely costs that are real. So many people get a little confused, though, because there's this thing called sunk cost. Yeah, but SUU has to pay that anyway, so why do I have to pay for it out of my grant? And so that's where it comes into play, that you have to start looking at the federal regulations and guidelines. So part of the process to come up with this 45% rate, you have to negotiate that with the federal government. Every 4 years, our accounting services goes through this very long, long, long process of creating what they call cost pools. These cost pools are made up of depreciation on buildings, facilities, utilities, the library, the administration, and they have to account for all of those and find out how much does it cost the university to do business with outside entities. And so they have a formula where they divide that by the base. The base we have chosen is salaries, wages, and benefits. We could have chosen to do what we call modified total direct costs, but for SUU, we did not. Right now, we are salaries, wages, and benefits. So they basically said, how much does it cost to administer work for SUU? They took those administrative and facilities costs, divided it by the amount of salaries, wages, and benefits the SUU pays, and it came up with 48.8%. That's what it came up in the year 2016. Now, we sent that in to the federal government. They looked over a great, big, huge spreadsheet, and they said, we're going to negotiate you down. And where we landed was 45%. So it wasn't this arbitrary rate that we just kind of pulled out of nowhere and said, I want to take your money. It is an absolute federally regulated process.
Well, and you mentioned the cost of doing business with outside agencies, but really there's a cost of doing business inside of our own institution. With my department being involved with instructional design, Canvas support, multimedia creation, and several other areas, I can definitely see where we do a lot of things that maybe skirt that scope of our job, or even go outside of our job just a little bit to help out a group that maybe has a grant.
Right.
And that costs us from doing things that might be more applicable to what we're supposed to be doing. So that internal doing business.
Absolutely. Yep. The cost is definitely there. I kind of like my paycheck.
Yeah.
And I'm in that cost pool.
Yeah.
Another myth that really comes out of this is that, oh, that only applies to federal grants. You only have to apply that 45% rate to federal grants because it is a federally negotiated rate. But what you need to understand is that part of that negotiation, the federal government is saying, what does it cost to do business with SUU? And how do you apply that consistently to all your grants? Because they don't want to be charged for that rate and then have an industry partner or the state not be charged that rate, because then that means that they are subsidizing what is not being recovered through those other types of grants. So we have to actually make an attestation that, yes, we treat that rate across the board consistently to all grants. Now, that doesn't mean that we charge it to all grants. Every single grant has its own way of being. They all right. have their own guidelines. But we do, if we don't charge the full rate, we have to put in a justification and understanding as to why SUU chose to not charge the rate in this circumstance. And how else are we going to cover those costs? And that's the other piece that so often is never talked about is who is going to pay those costs if we don't recoup the F&A on it? Who does pay it? I know Marvin just gave a really great budget presentation a couple weeks ago, and they always talk about how does SUU get their money? You have a portion that's from the state, from the taxpayer base, and you have the portion that's from the students, from the tuition-based. It's usually 49, 51% that swings kind of back and forth a little bit. And that's who has to pay. If we don't recoup those F&A costs, it goes back to that pool, to that taxpayer base and that student base. So we have to be really careful that when we're waiving the F&A costs, that we understand that, yes, it makes sense. It makes sense to pass that cost on to the taxpayers and the students. And there are absolutely grants where that does make sense, for sure. But we just want to be cognizant of the why behind what we do with that.
Well, and I mean, that's a great point, because when we think about the cost of higher education today, you know, Utah this year had a tuition freeze across the state.
Right.
The governor asked that no tuition raised. You know, that right there, if we think that about all these grants that come through, and if that's got to be passed on to either the taxpayers through legislative action when we get our funds every spring, or through student tuition, is it really fair to push that back onto students? You know,
right.
Because we don't know what we're going to get at any point from the state until it's done.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, we want to keep tuition rate down. SUU has done a great job in the last several years of not raising tuition.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, that definitely makes sense. We need to be thinking about, do we want to pass that on, or is that something we need to make sure is included?
Right. Yeah, we're passionate about our students here at SUU, and it's always student first. So that's why the Spark office can sometimes get a little bit particular, say, hey, have we thought about this? An interesting side note, one of our student interns in our office is Carson Brown, who is the student body president for next year. And he understands who pays for F&A if it's not collected.
Yeah, well, and you and I were talking before we came in here and started the podcast that was an area that on the ARVR grant, the augmented and virtual reality grant that CTI is overseeing right now, we failed to add, that we didn't add that to our grant. And so that cost is going to have to be covered one way or the other from either legislative funding or
correct,
tuition dollars.
Right. And again, that could be a very good example of how is this going to be benefiting students? Students are absolutely going to be benefited very positively by that VR grant. But on the other hand, if we could have recouped some of those costs, we definitely would want to ask for it to recoup it. So our first rule of thumb is always ask. We always ask for it. A sponsor can come back and say, no, we don't agree, we're not going to pay for that. But we always ask up front.
Well, and that's the beauty of it. What's the worst they're going to do? Tell us no?
Exactly.
Okay, fine. You told us no, and now we got to make sure we can accommodate it here inside of our own.
That's right. That's the law in the grant world. If you don't ask, you don't get it.
Absolutely. So, Sylvia, we've already learned quite a bit just in this one grant that I've been involved with in getting the augmented and virtual reality studio created and in place. And one of the things we learned about was this is the facilities and administrative services, the FNA, and what we should do there. But now that we've received the grant, we're transitioning into a different phase of the grant, and we're with you now, Carrie.
Yes, that's right. So I work a lot in our post-award functions. So that's anything that happens after we receive an award. So we get our letter, says, congratulations. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's bad. It kind of just depends, but always an adventure. But as part of these agreements, we're promising to do something, right? Whether we're completing a program, there's usually reporting requirements involved. We're spending money that isn't ours, but it's been, you know, endowed, entrusted to us. And so my role is to make sure that we're fulfilling those requirements, that we're spending the way that we should be. We're completing the program that way that we should be. And if things go off the rails, because, you know, sometimes that'll happen, that we're communicating with our sponsors so that they know that there's no surprises and that we're still meeting our requirements when it comes to those agreements. So I help a lot in that area. We have several on our team, though, that help. Katie is mainly in charge of our compliance. And so depending on what department you're in and who you worked with at the beginning, you'll either speak with me or you'll speak with Katie. But anyway, yes, that's kind of what we're transitioning now to in your grant, is that we're fulfilling those responsibilities, right? You're building your program, you're creating content, you're looking at hardware, and we're looking at what was put into the grant, and we're making sure that we're fulfilling those roles, those responsibilities.
So then a question for both of you, I guess. In a situation, and we're going to use the ARVR grant, where we know we did not put the FNA funds into it. Now that we're into that transition of doing everything, how does that really impact the university? And someone that would be in my position as the PI, what would they need to be familiar with when it comes to that aspect? I know we kind of talk about it. Let's reframe it inside of, here's a grant that we know SUU got that did not have that. What's the impact there?
Great question. I love that. And first of all, I got a comment on how we use this term FNA.
Sorry.
This is the only time we get to be vulgar. And not really being vulgar. I promise I am not a vulgar person.
It's only vulgar if you're using it in the inappropriate way. And we're not.
We're just shortening.
It's hard to say financial and administrative services over and over again.
Absolutely. And that's exactly why we shorten it. Yeah. But in the pre-award side, we do kind of use it in a little bit of with hesitation there, because it is hard to take away part of that budget. But on the post-award side, this is when F&A gets really exciting and actually really fun.
Can I back up just a little bit, though?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a lot of times that it's meant to be planned into your award. I mean, when you're looking at building your budget, federal sponsors know that this is something that's part of those budgets. And so they kind of expect to see that. So it's a matter of back to the, we need to ask for it, because a lot of times they do accommodate it. So you can ask for your whole budget, the whole $20,000, and then the F&A gets added on top of that if we know what we're doing when we ask. So,
right. And that's why it's so important to engage our office before you hit submit. We need to absolutely be part of that process to help develop those budgets that include the F&A. And Carrie brings up a really great point here. A lot of the programs with the federal agencies, you won't even have your application reviewed if you have not included F&A. Because they consider that as cost share. They know those costs are real. If you have not included it, they kind of think, does this institution really know what they're doing? Do they really know how to plan out their grants? They haven't included this. It's against federal rules to include cost share on a lot of the agency programs, and they won't even review your application because you've, number one, crossed that line of not including the full amount of costs that are involved. And so they can't have anybody buying an approval on a grant by putting in cost share. So a lot of times they will just disqualify them if they have included that.
That's great to know, because I mean that doesn't even get you out the gate.
Right.
They take a look at your your application or your request, and we're just going to move it to the side because they don't know what they're doing or they didn't include this. And so you don't even get looked at if you don't have it. That's good to know.
And that's not true with state. The state is the opposite. So we got to know who it is we're dealing with and just develop to those partners and what their expectations are. But back to the fun side of the post award with the F&A. Yeah. So we've now collected that $4,500 that we talked about earlier. Where does that go? Well, we have a memo from our VP of Finance that allows a distribution of those funds. So off the top, we redistribute 6.5% of the $4,500 to the library to help with the support services they provide. 18.5% goes to the Spark office to help keep our office up and running and to give us funding to help faculty and staff in training and understanding how to engage in grants. The rest of that 75% gets distributed differently depending on whether it's an academic grant or if it's a non-academic grant. Academic grants, 20% goes to the provost, 20% goes to the dean, 20% goes to the department chair, and then 15% goes to the PI. And what I mean by goes to, we actually create an account, we call it an IDC account for indirect costs, and it's in the name of either that department, that dean, the provost, or the PI. And they can use those funds for anything that furthers your scholarly or creative activities. That's a pretty broad ability. And it is not tied to the grant at that point, because once the funds are recovered to SUU, they're not tied to any of the regulations anymore. So those accounts become really golden. You can use those to hire students, for publication costs, for traveling to conferences, whatever it is you need to further your scholarly or creative activities.
Wow.
And that is absolutely incredible. When we go to conferences and talk about this, many people are just absolutely jealous and wanting to know, now, which institution do you work for? Let me know when an opening opens up, because it really is a very generous, generous way of supporting our faculty and staff.
I'm like, wow, because I'm thinking about the grant that I'm the PI on, and what could we have done with some of that indirect cost, or having an indirect cost account set up to where we could take some of that money and do additional things to support those initiatives.
Exactly. And it's great too, because then the chairs and the deans have funding as well for whatever it is they want to promote within their area's responsibility. So it really is a great way to give back.
Yeah. Great. So that's a really great point about thinking about how those indirect costs can go back to benefit additional things, such as going to conferences or trainings or whatever the case may be. From a faculty perspective, because you mentioned that part goes to the provost office, because correct me if I'm wrong, but if a faculty member submits a grant, then that percentage is going to go back to the provost office, their college,
their chair, and then 15% back to themselves in an IDC account.
Okay.
So it is still an SUU account, but they have the spending control over that account.
What would be a recommendation or a common thing that you see faculty make a mistake with when they get this indirect cost account?
Can I answer that?
By all means, yes.
So the main thing that I see, it isn't necessarily in using the IDC account, it's in recognizing what it's meant to cover. So a lot of times we'll have a piece of the grant that needs to be like an evaluation or a survey or something like that, and they'll actually assign those responsibilities to administrative employees, which, because we're already charging the F&A recovery to the grant, we actually can't charge an administrative salary line to it, or even give an overload for it. So that time that they're assigning off to an administrative employee is really hard to justify on a grant. Now, if they wanted to do something and work with the department and with the college, they could get approval, particularly if that administrative personnel wasn't a full-time employee, if they were on a shorter contract. they could then be hired essentially to fulfill that work, but it would come off of either the IDC or another source like that. So, I mean, that's something that I see a lot is they say, hey, we have this work that needs to be done. I want to pay my admin a little bit more because she's taking on extra responsibility, which is valid, but it's really hard to justify when we're already charging an administrative cost to it. So that right. I see so you that would, a lot.
Right. So you couldn't charge the grant for that extra amount you want to pay your admin for being a rock star. You would then pay for that out of your indirect cost account.
Okay. Yeah. And that makes sense because the government, you've got to be able to, everything has to be justified, right?
Right.
And so when it comes to that time where you've got to justify, this is what we did with the funds.
Right.
It could actually cause you some headache.
It can.
Down the road.
Well, and because it is by definition indirect. I mean, it's really hard to track. So, I mean, we can't say, well, my admin spent 5% of her time doing this. Well, how do you actually track that? How can you prove that? And so, yeah, that's why they make it the structure that they do so that we can say it's just a flat percentage, but we just need to make sure that we're not double charging at that point.
That's good to know. And I'm sure that'll be good for faculty to know too.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's an important thing. That's why they need to keep going back to you.
Exactly. And say,
okay,
yes.
You helped me get this grant. Help me continue help doing me do what's it. Appropriate.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Great. So, you know, obviously keeping involved with you all throughout the entire process, not just, you know, from getting the grant, but through the life of the grant and then the end of the grant, making sure that as faculty or as staff, we're ensuring that our spending is appropriate, that we're not going to get SU in trouble, get ourselves in trouble, is really important. What other thoughts or final thoughts do you have for faculty that are listening right now when it comes to getting grants or making sure that the F&A is set up correctly?
Ooh, you know, I'd actually like to back away from the F&A discussion part of it. That's yeah. That's kind of the compliance of grants. And a lot of times people look at the Spark office and they think about the compliance side. But what I'd really like to leave with is the more fun side of this. What is the impact of grants here at SUU? We have so many incredible, incredible employees that are going above and beyond and doing amazing things with the grants. Our largest grant is the Head Start program. What an incredible program for the community and yeah. these at-risk kids to get them on the right track from the very beginning. I'm so proud of SUU and where we stand with that. How amazing are these TRIO programs where they add those extra services for the kids that don't usually make it to college and they help make sure that they get here? I mean, that is absolutely generationally uplifting. And those are the sorts of things that are really the most fun. When we watch a professor that's put in several different grants for a specific research that they're passionate about, and they finally get that letter that says, congratulations, it is just an absolute beautiful day in our office. We all celebrate and get excited, and it is just so fulfilling. And to just see people's passions come to light and to be able to have that green light to say, go, yes. Go and do and make this amazing thing happen and engage the students. The experiences that are offered to the students because of grants that are brought in, they are transformational for these students. They wouldn't get this kind of experience anywhere else. And I'm just so proud of those people that dive into this and put that extra work into it. And it makes for an exciting, exciting career for me and being here with SUU.
I can only imagine because I got the opportunity to watch Jen McKenzie present her grant to some faculty up in Granite School District and basically told them, you can get this certification for free.
Yeah.
All you have mm-hmm. to do is fill this stuff out. And I remember watching their faces. I was kind of out in the hallway. And I remember watching their faces like, what?
What was that word again?
Wait,
free?
There's going to be no cost. And just like, no, it pays for it.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, you're right. The impact that it has on our community locally, statewide is huge.
I know we hear enough bad in the world. Let's start talking about all the good.
I agree.
And this is an area where there is a whole lot of good.
My parting words would be, don't give up. If you get that first letter and it says, no, sorry, not this time, don't give up, because it'll come eventually. And we're here to help you. And honestly, if you do get that letter that says, congratulations, again, don't give up. Because exactly. We're here to help. And, and you know, we try to be friendly and responsive. And honestly, we're proud of you and we want to help you. So reach out.
That's great. That, you know, I think those are great notes to end on. You know, for those of you listening, if you're interested in even just small grants, this doesn't have to be some big multi-million-dollar grant. This can be, you know, we were using an example of $20,000, but I'm sure there's grants out there that are smaller than that.
I think our smallest is $1,000 right now.
So there you go, $1,000 to do something unique and innovative in your classroom or with your curriculum. You know, reach out to the Spark office. They're wonderful to work with. I've been working with them for, we've been in the same branch of the provost office for a while, but working directly with a grant for coming up on a year now. And they're wonderful to work with, easy to work with. They don't make you feel dumb when you ask questions or you forget to include F&A into your grant. They work to educate you and make you ready for that next grant you go for. So please take some time, reach out to the Spark office and get some funds to do something unique or innovative in your classroom. Thank you to Sylvia Bradshaw and Carrie Childs for taking some time today to talk about how grants can help educators be innovative in their classrooms and some of the key aspects of a grant, such as F&A, that they sometimes may overlook. I hope you join us throughout the summer as we start having other conversations, not only with the Spark office, but we're going to have Steve Meredith join us to talk about who is the new learner at SUU, as well as ways that we can be more inclusive in the classroom for all of our students. We look forward to having you join us back again. Until next time, keep innovating.